Radio Influence. The future is now.
You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome back to In the Trenches. This is going to be a special edition. We had Mr. Cook on from the Pew Report last week, and it was quite eventful. It was great. We had some great discussions, and we have a young kid. I'm going to introduce you any second here, but before that, I got to give some love to our sponsor, Hess Spinal Centers. When you go through a tough time of auto accidents, they have all the answers. You need to go check them out. They're not about anti-aging gimmicks. It's just helping you guys out when you're going through this tough time. They have 16 Bay Area locations, 1-800-618-HESS. When you're in this bad situation, don't stress. Call Hess, 1-800-618-HESS. Okay, time for introductions. Young man right here, Trevor Sikkema. First of all, good afternoon, sir. Good morning.
Yeah, no, it's good to be here, man.
Absolutely. From the Pewter Report. You're a young man now. I have shoes that are older than you. How old would you be?
I am 26 years old.
Okay, so, you know, Mark Cook was in here, known Scott Reynolds for a long, long time. They speak very highly of you and your football knowledge. Now, how does a young man have so much football knowledge?
Honestly, just from a love of watching the game. So I never even played football.
Okay.
I wish I would have been able to in high school, but my genetics made it so I was more of a late bloomer. I'm not even big now, but you know, more of a late bloomer.
Sure.
So my mother, I was good at flag football, all that kind of stuff, and I was like, hey, you know, I want to play football in high school. And my mother said, absolutely not. You're going to get killed.
Okay.
So instead, just obviously became a huge fan. I'm from Bradenton, Florida, which is just about an hour south near where Anna Maria Island is, if anybody knows that. And so been watching the Bucs since before I can remember. And so I've been following them a long time. Went to the University of Florida, got a broadcast degree up there, covered sports up there. Kind of been writing for all kinds of places since then, taking any opportunity I can, meeting as many people as I can, reading as much stuff as I can, and now I'm kind of here where I am right now with Pewter Report.
If you grew up in Montreal, Canada, like I grew up, you would be a hockey. You look like a hockey player.
Oh,
played. You get that, don't you, Lon?
I played hockey from when I was 3 to when I was 13, and as you'll see, like a common theme here. Once you turn 13. You can start like actually like body checking people and fighting people.
Yeah,
and wasn't about that.
Okay.
I just wasn't about that. So
you were Wayne Gretzky, right?
I could skate faster than everybody on the ice, but as soon as they could like put me into the boards,
sure,
that was it for me. So no, I absolutely I feel you there. I'm a big hockey fan. So,
well, you know, I actually played hockey before I played football.
I read that.
Yeah,
you know what I read
and,
that. I did a little homework before I
well,
came
good.
Out here. So
well, homework is good. Played hockey for 1 year. You know, my father bought all the equipment, which is pretty darn expensive.
Yes.
And
yes,
then a football coach saw me walking around the field, and he says, go give your dad this note. And the notes were like, this kid needs to be playing football.
Yeah.
Okay? Because I looked like this when I was six. So it was pretty evident in my world that football was going to be the way I'd go. But you look like you're from Montreal.
Well,
you got that hockey feel. You got like a Steve Stamkos.
People fit. Say that I look like Steven Stamkos.
A little bit.
And I do
that
enjoy.
That can't be terrible.
I know. I enjoy hearing it.
That's
you know,
what I'm saying.
A couple years ago, he might have left in free agency, and I was like, please don't. And then I'm not going to have a doppelganger
right
out of the bars. You know what I'm saying? So
I would like to catch some of Steve Stamkos' scraps.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I know whatever's falling off, whatever's falling off of him, that those scraps are real good. That's for sure.
Sure.
There you go. So Pewter Report. I was the Pewter Report used to be Buccaneer Magazine. I remember
they
way
did.
Back when.
Yeah.
That was almost before you were born. Really silly, but it's pretty close.
It's close. Scott, yeah. I think Scott's been writing for Pewter Report for like 24 years. So I think I was 2 years old when he started writing for Pewter Report.
Yeah. Now I look back and I started with the Bucks in 1990. That's almost 20 years ago, man.
You started
ago.
For the Bucks before I was
yeah,
born.
Yeah, that's well, great. That's good to know. So I was hip to the Pewter Report and Buccaneer Magazine, and you could ask Scott. I gave Scott heck because I'd started for 6 years and I was never on the cover, and I gave him heck. And on my seventh year, I finally got on. I still have it somewhere.
There you go.
And a plaque, and it's one of my favorite plaques out there. But so your knowledge in football, let me say this, okay? There's people who've played the game like myself, okay? The knowledge is going to be at a different level.
Sure.
But just because you haven't played the game, that doesn't mean you can't be knowledgeable. because some of the most knowledgeable football minds ever never played the game.
Well, the thing that I enjoy, I guess, the most about writing and about the game of football is that, it was the player side of, like, the intricacies of the game that really drew me to it. Like, mm-hmm. the X's and O's. The, hey, here was an 18-yard gain. Why did that happen? Exactly. It's not just because the guy's fast. Mm-hmm. Everybody's fast. It's not just because he's strong. Everybody's strong. Mm-hmm. So why does it happen? So that kind of chess game with the most athletic people on the planet is what really kind of drew my mm-hmm. interest. And I think the reason why people have enjoyed my work, which I'm super appreciative for, is the fact that I don't come from a football background. Mm-hmm. So when I try to explain it to people, I can only explain it as somebody who never played the game. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the other people have never played the game before. So sure. It's kind of a bridge that I'm trying to gap. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to be more knowledgeable than somebody who played or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to kind of, hey, there's a lot of casual football fans who would love to know the game and even their team better than they could in other ways. And sometimes when players speak, I've noticed this, because I try to read, listen to a lot of players that I can, obviously just to make me a smarter football fan too. But a lot of times they'll say, like, this terminology and this and that and all this, and they'll kind of get carried away as, hey, this is second nature to me. And when I hear it as a fan, I don't really know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I said, I'm trying to bridge that gap a little bit, trying to be the middleman, and I guess it's been a pretty good brand for me so far. So,
well, good for you. And I'm going to say this. If you're not an expert, there's not a lot of experts out there in anything, okay?
Sure.
Sometimes the worst thing to do is to elaborate, because there might be some experts listening. You know, being on sports radio for a long time, like, when I talk about certain things, even when I talk about hockey, I'm confident in my hockey knowledge because I know out there, my resume is better than most of the people listening. For mm-hmm. I've been watching hockey since I was 4 years old.
Right. You're from Canada. Yeah. That's already a bump right
okay.
there.
Yeah, well, I didn't have much choice, okay? And I love the sport of hockey.
Sure.
Going to hockey to me is the best. But my knowledge is vast. I've been to 2 Stanley Cups. I was in Montreal on the glass when they were playing against the Kings and Wayne Gretzky. So I got, we talk about old hockey, I can hold my own. Now, if I went to Montreal, I wouldn't elaborate so much because there's people on the other side know a whole lot.
Sure.
And you brought up something to me, and it's 100% correct. When you talk about the chess game, people don't even understand the chess game going on because, you know, I put in so much time when I watch a football game. Sometimes a quarterback will pitch the ball and the running back will catch the ball and go, uh-oh. Like, I see it happening before it happens. Like, there's certain things, if it happens in a play, if your end gets reached and a linebacker doesn't get upfield, that's going to be a big play. It happens every single time.
Right.
So I see things kind of developing really before they develop. And, you know, I was talking to Mark about, I have this beautiful room here. When the lights go off, it's a nice place to watch, whatever. Mm-hmm. I was saying we should come sit down one day and sit and talk and sit down and watch some football. Because, you know, this is a place where we sit down and watch football. It might be myself, Tony Mayberry. There's times it's been Sean King and Martin Gramatica, a lot of old players, right? So when we're watching football, everybody around is quiet because mm-hmm. they're just listening. Shane Stafford's there, and they're breaking down defenses. You know what? I'm learning, too. The thing is, I know about as much as you can learn about being a guard or a tackle or center for the most part, but I don't know what the hell a receiver does. Like, I don't know what's going through the quarterback's mind. So when these guys are teaching, like, I'm looking at everybody else, and they're just absorbing it, and they're like, oh, my God, I'm learning so much. But in a way, it's too much at one time because you said – terminology, because I was talking to somebody, I said, listen, a lot of people think they know, but they don't. And I go, the average fan doesn't know the basics. He goes, well, I'm not an average fan. And I said, well, do you know the difference between a 1-gap and a 2-gap player? Yeah, yeah. And I go, explain it. And he couldn't explain it. So just because you've heard something over and over, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just going to be told, I don't know what cover one is. Not really. I don't really know what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a safety deep. But other than that, I don't know what everybody else is supposed to do. I hear it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So football is so complicated.
Yeah.
Once you delve into it, because chess is not complicated when you've been playing for a couple weeks. But when you get to the next level, it's going to be complicated.
Right.
So I think you see that as a writer.
Yeah, no, I definitely try to. We were at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama a couple weeks ago. And they have this room now. I think it's brought to you by Exos, I think. And it's like this, basically this all 22 room is what they call it. And you can go up there and get basically the all 22 footage, which is the different camera angles for everybody who doesn't know, of the different practice drills and things they have. And we will sit there and watch not even a full play. It's almost just like the first 2 seconds of a play and rewind it
over
for
over
five, like over. For like 5 minutes. Yep. And there's so much that you can learn within the first second of a play because of, like you said, it's a chess game.
It's complex, bro.
Yeah.
It's really it looks like a bunch of people bumping into each other.
Kind of.
It really does.
You wonder how it's going to work. Like, you see the snap, and then, like, you'll see a snap, and all of a sudden you'll see a tight end move behind the line of scrimmage. You'll see a guard pull, and you'll go, okay, how the –
there's a lot of stuff going
on. I don't even know where the running back's going to go. I don't know where the ball's going, anything like that.
But because I've watched so much football, I will.
Oh, sure, sure.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I can just see the way linemen are stepping, and I know which way the ball's going.
Yeah.
Great linebackers back in the day, you know, when you see – I hate rookies. Okay, I started 16 games as a rookie. I'd probably throw up in my mouth when I went back and watched the film because I was probably doing rookie stuff.
Right, sure.
You're only supposed to do rookie stuff your first year. If you're doing rookie stuff your second year, you're going to be cut. So I did rookie stuff my first year. Got my ass kicked plenty. You know, I was out there fighting, of course. But when you look at the way you study film, when I was watching film as a rookie, I was just watching film going, oh, that guy's strong or that. By the end of my career, I was watching film almost like a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Like every down and distance, I'm looking to see whether the defensive lineman is on my outside shade.
Sure.
Head up, inside. I'll go back and watch 10 films. And sometimes some defensive lineman will react the exact same way from the exact same spot every time. If I know what he's going to do, then I have a step up.
Right, right.
Like you see some defensive linemen sometimes line up really, really wide. There's a reason why they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the chess game.
Right.
Like, Warren Sapp used to line up. He was the first defensive lineman to line up really, really wide. Like, almost on the inside a shoulder of the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a guard, that's a son of a bitch. Because you got to get out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the footwork becomes almost unnatural.
Right, right.
So now you're almost playing like a tackle.
Yeah.
And then he turns his head and he runs into you and he bull rushes you straight into the quarterback.
Yeah.
Or he blows up the field and they run a tackle and stunt. And the end comes, you know, scot-free.
Yeah.
Or he just swims around you. So I never played against Warren, but I'll be honest with you, I wasn't really trying to.
I remember going back and watching just some old Warren Sapp film, and you're right. Because he was so freakishly athletic for how big that he was, he could line up wherever he wanted. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like Warren could line up anywhere from like one to like 4i or whatever you want to call it, you know, like
you got the terminology right.
And like it's mm-hmm. like you said, like you're lining up on a guard's outside shoulder and you're bull rushing him into a quarterback. Mm-hmm. How often does that happen?
Almost never. Often,
and then if he decides to do a different move to you, mm-hmm. he's got like the bend to get around you, which mm-hmm. is crazy. So Warren Sapp was crazy. And that's the thing too, and that's why all this is so fascinating with it, because there are certain staples of football that you have to do. Like obviously, the first staple is gap control. You've got to have, you know, a hat on a hat. That's mm-hmm. just how it is. You've got to have the equal amount of gaps, everything like that. But beyond that, the creativity of how you do it is so much fun. And it can vary depending on what kind of players you have.
Sure.
You know, like, that's why from team to team, coach to coach, even year to year, you could see different creativity that you've never seen before. And that's why, you know, football never gets boring to me.
No.
And that's why the NFL draft, too. I'm big into the NFL draft because I'm watching these kids. And I'm just thinking of the what if. I'm thinking of where the game's going next, where recent coaches with success have been going, mm-hmm. how these kids are going to fit, all that kinds of stuff. So,
see, now, I don't delve too deep into the NFL draft. I don't, because I don't really have to.
Well, you hate rookies. So.
Well, I do hate rookies. Now they're going to turn into great football players.
Sure. Yeah.
But this is the thing you have to understand. If you're an organization, just know that that rookie probably is not going to help you win this year. That's just the way it goes.
Right.
If you put a rookie in. First of all, if you have a bunch of rookies, you're going to lose. That's just the way it happens. You could sprinkle in a rookie amongst a bunch of veteran players and get away with it. But that rookie is not going to play up to par if you really – and they'll say, well, he played well for a rookie. Nobody gives a crap you're a rookie. You're the right guard.
Yeah,
I was
right,
the right
exactly.
guard. Nobody goes, well, my coach never said, Ian, I know you're a rookie, but never. Okay, Ian, you did this wrong. Ian, you can't do this anymore. That's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
So your rookie year, you take a bunch of ass kickings – and as I did, and then you got to figure out the way to play the next year. I'll give you a great example. Dennis Byrd, remember Dennis Byrd?
Mm-hmm.
The kid that broke his neck, he's dead now. But I played against Dennis Byrd the last game of my rookie year. He ate my lunch. I couldn't block him. Like, he would just do this okey-doke swim move, and I couldn't put my damn hands on him. And then the year after, the next year, which was my second year, I played against him the first game of the season. So I had the whole offseason to think of how he kicked my ass in the last game. But then I also had the whole offseason to have a game plan.
Right.
And I game planned the crap out of him. Like, all he was doing was hitting my hands and getting me off balance.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would shoot my hands, and I would see as him trying to slap him, and I'd pull them back, and his footwork would be off, and I would kill him the whole rest of the game.
What move gave you the most fits?
I tell you what, a tall defensive lineman with long arms.
Like a D end or like a 3-4
end? Well, it doesn't really matter which style you are.
Okay.
I'm going to give you Frank Warren was a name, and they're not really big time names. Keith Hamilton. Those are the two guys that gave me ridiculous fits. But if you have a tall, like some of these guys are playing a 6'7".
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. With long arms. So this is the problem. Like, I don't, how tall are you?
I'm 5'11".
Okay. If we stood up right now and I bull rushed you, my hands are going to be on you. Your hands are not going to be on me.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it tough, doesn't it?
Yes.
So they're 6'7". I'm 6'1". I can't use my assets, which is just balling somebody.
Yeah.
They're just putting their hands on me and pushing me back.
Right.
So if I'm not able to use some way to outsmart them, because they're all really stupid, all D linemen are just ignorant as hell. If I can't use my mentality and head fake, and they're just running into you and bull rushing you, it could be a long, long day.
Huh.
Real long.
Huh.
And I played against Reggie White and John Randall and Howie Long and Chester McLaughlin and a bunch of Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my film against them, against anybody's. But there's a couple guys that are just offshoot guys that I just never heard of before.
Right.
That gave me a good old-fashioned ass
No,
kicker.
I love hearing that. Because, I mean, it's part of the chess game.
It's part
of
it. Yeah.
Do it with length. It's if he knows how to get his arm out,
Sometimes
he could just get it straight in your chest and you've got your arm fully extended. Yeah. You can't even touch
him. That's a problem,
you
right?
know?
You see guys like Jadeveon Clowney is a great example. And Jadeveon Clowney found a way to use him.
Mm-hmm.
He's still not a great football player, but he's a tremendous athlete.
Yeah, he's a freak, man.
Yeah, but you watch him playing football. He's not a good football player. He's always out of position, but they're using him. Like, they're bouncing him around, just using his athletic ability. He really plays well.
Mm-hmm.
But when he gets to college, he's so much longer than everybody else.
Right.
He's just using his leverage.
Right.
But when you get to the league, everybody's
it's different. Yeah. It's a lot different.
Well, the left tackles have to be long. They got to be long.
Yeah.
You don't see left tackles.
For this reason. Yeah. You can't get out, like, matched like that, you know?
Like, if you see guys like Javon Curse, you look at them as just human beings. They're like, dude, who the hell, what planet are you from? I mean, like, then you expect somebody to block
nicknames
that.
A freak, so.
You know, like guys like Alonzo Spellman, you look at him, I'm like, what? Where do you get this freaking guy from?
Yeah.
But you got to figure out ways to block him, and that's it. That's why the mentality part of it, you have to outsmart some players, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Now, have you always been a Buccaneer fan?
I have, yeah, right? Just being from the area.
Sure,
so.
Absolutely. So, you know. This is a crucial year for a whole lot of people in the Buccaneer organization.
No question. No question.
Like, it's crucial because last year wasn't quite as crucial as this year. Because last year, expectations were high. The expectations were squashed probably third into the season.
Yeah,
when we
five
realized,
games in.
Yeah, we realized.
That Arizona game when it was like, okay, well, we just got run out of the building.
We're not that good.
Yeah.
And after that, I go, oh, well, okay, we're just not that good.
Yeah.
You know, good teams don't get trounced like that.
No.
So this year is obviously crucial for Dirk Koetter, for Jason Light, and then let's say players like Gerald McCoy.
Sure.
Jameis Winston. Now, Jameis Winston has been in the league long enough to have been winning, okay, because look at the great ones.
Yeah.
The great ones didn't go 3 years with losing.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
So if Jameis Winston doesn't go to the playoffs this year, he's a loser. That is, I mean, I'm a Jameis Winston fan.
Yeah.
But all the other great ones
figured
it out.
You've got to elevate.
Absolutely.
Some way.
Absolutely.
No question.
Jameis Winston, I'm still a fan. I still like the kid. I still think he has some growing up to do. I think he has to temper back a little bit on the leadership thing and just worry more about your craft.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, he's not the player to make everybody better around him yet. Mm-hmm. He actually made DeSean Jackson worse last year.
Yeah, and a couple of weird quotes last year, which, like, it's just midway through the year, you could tell he's nervous, he's stressed because he's trying to get DeSean Jackson involved. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just focusing on that. And like, mm-hmm. at the last game of the year, now I get it. The last game of the year didn't really matter. But at the end of the game, he goes, "Yeah, all what I was focusing on was trying to get Mike that 1,000 yards." And it's like, come on, man. Like, yeah. it's gonna come. You know yeah. what I'm saying? Like, you the Bucks, and that was the thing last year that just made everything so weird. It's like, they just overthought everything. It's like, you're good enough. Yeah, I mean, Dirk Cutter's not an idiot. He's been around forever. He knows how to call certain plays. So why did they crap themselves so hard in the end zone, you know, or in the red zone, you know? Why did Jameis Winston stress so much about getting different people the ball? Cam Braid, O.J. Howard. I got to, you know, bring up O.J. Howard's rookie year. Yeah, but I've got to still stay with Cam Braid. Oh, I've got to get DeSean Jackson the ball deep. Oh, I've got to make sure I feed Mike Evans because he's the friend. Like, just play the game, man. It's going to happen. Yeah.
I think when you look back at the year, and at the end of the year, Jason Light said something like, you know, basically the expectations were too high. Okay?
Yeah, he's cringeworthy.
I didn't like that. I didn't like that because I want to believe a general manager is going to put a team on the field that he thinks is going to make the playoffs, or else you guys missed the boat on free agency. Right. You should have brought some more damn players up in here, okay? Yep. So I didn't like that quote. Yep. But when you look at our team, I think a lot of times we over-evaluate players and we make them things that they're not, okay? Because if you look at our team, and if you say, okay, look, go to the New England Patriots, and I really don't like to compare anybody to the Patriots, but the Patriots are full of winners. They're full of winners. Winners everywhere.
Right.
Who are the winners on our team, on the Buccaneers? And I don't want to hear nothing about college, and I mean nothing. Who are the winners on our team? Who knows what it looks like? Who knows? And I'm go all the way to front office, coaches, front office, anybody. Who knows? I tell you who knows what it looks like. Bill Parcells, Belichick.
Right.
You know, guys, they know what it looks like. Who knows in our organization what it looks like? It's a tough question, isn't it?
Right.
No, I can't think of a player. Like, DeSean Jackson bounced around. He didn't really win that much.
Yeah.
He was never part of anything great. Mike Evans been here. Jameis Winston's been here. Gerald McCoy's been here. Levante's been here. Where is the winning attitude?
Yeah.
Because you always hear about that player that comes in with that attitude and he changes everybody else. Mm-hmm. Who's changing our attitude?
I thought T.J. Ward was going to be that guy and he just was not.
Oh, my God. He couldn't even get on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem.
When T.J. Ward became available, I was like standing on the table for this reason. Mm-hmm. I was like, this guy played as a centerpiece for the no-fly zone in Denver that won a mm-hmm. Super Bowl. Get this guy on the team. And I thought to myself, I was like, eventually it's going to be Justin Evans as the free safety, mm-hmm. and it's going to be T.J. Ward as a strong safety. And that's going to elevate the whole rest. Because, sure. for one, I hated how they played their safeties in 2016. Okay. This whole, like, we're going to stay multiple. One of them could be the free. One of them could be the strong at any play. Mm-hmm. Instead, it just left them both standing in the middle of the field for the first 2 seconds of the play, and Drew Brees going, ha, okay, mm-hmm. and just tearing them up, or whatever quarterback it was. So I hated mm-hmm. how they tried to confuse, or they tried to disguise being quote-unquote multiple mm-hmm. with not even really having a safety position. And they did that a little bit in 2017 to continue. But again, so I thought bringing Ward in as a bona fide strong safety was going to bring more leadership, more definitive positions, more aggression to the team, and it just did none of it. They tried to make Ward into this double safety like mm-hmm. they did all along, and one, like you said, Ward could barely even get on the field, and yeah. two, it's like, I'm not in the locker room all the time, so I don't know, so it's hard for me to mm-hmm. criticize this, but like, it didn't feel like he was elevating anybody.
Well, you know? No. I didn't know much about him before. He came with, you know, everybody was talking him up real highly, and I watched him, I go,
hell, some swagger in Denver.
But I watched him on the field, I go, that's the guy? Like, I watched him all year, a little bit.
That's what I'm saying.
I saw him get deked out a lot. I seen him look bad a lot, out of place a lot. Now, I'm going to say this. In defense of every defensive back on this Buccaneer team, they can't be at their best. We don't have no pass rush.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. I interviewed Tony Dungy, and I've been around Tony Dungy, and you can say what you want. If you don't have a pass rush, you're going to give up a lot of points.
Oh, no question.
You know,
a lot of yards, a lot of points.
Your DBs, I said Tony, I had him on the show, I said, Tony, what's more important in the cover two, a great pass rush or great DBs? He said pass rush. And he didn't wait a second. Pass rush. I think pass rush is the most important thing in football.
Yes.
If you don't put a hand on a quarterback,
quarterbacks one, pass rushes two. Any way you can get to it. And like, it's not even in today's NFL. It's not even, oh, we have our four starting defensive linemen. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Get five. Get six. You're rotating guys in.
We used to have eight.
Yeah, like it doesn't. Yeah. It just doesn't matter. You can tell the good teams in the NFL who is and who isn't because they'll tell you how to reload a pass rush.
Absolutely.
That's it.
And to me, like back in the day when the Bucs were great, and you know we had Warren Sapp and we had Simeon Rice, and but you know Brad Culpepper used to get 9-10 sacks. You know guys like Marcus Jones, Chidi Ahanotu. I mean they had double digit sacks. We haven't had a double digit sack since Simeon Rice. It's how can and. Listen, Jason Light, go find me a pass rusher. Go find it's not as easy as it sounds, obviously,
right?
Because we haven't done it,
right?
But I mean, when you go out and get Chris Baker, who evaluated that? Who thought that was good? I saw Chris Baker. He made quite a bit of money, and I wanted to make his money. I watched every snap of every Buccaneer game, and I saw Chris Baker make three plays this year.
It was bad.
It was terrible.
It was really bad.
And he looked like he didn't give a rat's ass.
Well, that's why he's not in Tampa anymore, for sure. I mean, the play was bad.
But the attitude wasn't great either.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Just kind of like, we're losing, so what? I hear everybody's joking around and laughing and smiling.
Yeah.
You know, that ain't going to cut it, man.
Yeah. Goes back to the mentality thing that you were talking about before. What winners we got on this team.
Exactly.
You know? Gerald McCoy, like, I love the dude, but all he's known is losing in the NFL. That's it. Correct. You know, so like who smacks Gerald McCoy in the face, you know?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. I think that's part of the problem. Because we don't have anybody who could smack Gerald McCoy in the face.
Sure.
That makes him the makeshift leader. And I have a problem with a makeshift leader that's helping people up off the ground. I got a problem with that. It's never happened before. Warren Sapp not only didn't help anybody off the ground, but he was skipping through people's warm-ups. When you look at, I played against guys like Mike Singletary. Well, he'll gouge your eyeballs out. That's leader of a defense. Mm-hmm. I don't want a nice, and Gerald's a nice guy, right?
No, he is.
I don't want a nice guy leading my defense. I don't want it. Okay, we can play chess. We can even play baseball. Not an NFL defense. No way. I've never seen Ray Lewis pick nobody up. I've seen him knock helmets off. Okay, I've seen him get in people's face. That rubs off. And if your leader is nice, then you have a nice defense.
Right.
And I think our defense is nice.
Oh, yeah.
They're nice.
No, they're soft. 100%.
They're soft.
100%.
I mean, it's like, come on now. I mean, if bring me a couple players that are going to tell Gerald to shut his freaking mouth. That's what I want. I really do. I think he'll be better off. We've never got anybody that would probably even, step to him like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, being an ex-player, I've talked to some players that played with him. Now, the media sometimes, and you could disagree if you want. I've been in the media, and I've been on the other side. Mm-hmm. I've been on both sides. Yeah. Very few people have been on both sides, okay? I've been on both sides, radio, television, the whole nine, and I played. A lot of the times, the media really won't talk poorly against somebody that they like because they got to see him the next day in the locker room.
Right.
That's Gerald's thing. He wants everybody to love him. So no, everybody says this about Gerald McCoy. You did it. I love him to death. But it shouldn't even be that. It should be, I've watched three games in a row, you haven't made a play. And people don't even say that. I do. You know what he's done? He's blocked me. He's blocked me on social media. He blocked me for years. Mm-hmm. He's the most sensitive football player I've ever seen. He's sensitive, isn't he?
His defensive lineman.
Period.
He Gerald McCoy cares what people think. He does.
Why? Why does Gerald McCoy and
people like this. Some people are wired, but like you said, if you don't want that you don't want that.
But he's not being mean. He's just being sensitive. Right. Those are two different things.
Oh, sure.
Listen. I've never seen a Pro Bowl player, and I'm gonna do quote unquote Pro Bowl player, get so much backlash from his own fans.
Yeah.
Whether it's justified or not, I don't know. But this is every time we do. I just started this podcast last year, and I said this at the beginning. Every year it's a broken record. Gerald McCoy goes off in preseason. You know why he goes off in preseason? Every quarterback's going on two, and he's jumping the count.
Sure.
He can't be blocked in practice.
Right.
He can't be blocked
right.
in the game.
Right.
And he's wrecking shop and he's killing everybody.
Right.
Everybody's going, this is his year. He's going to have double sacks. And I go, no, he's not. We did the same thing last year. I go, at the end of the year, he's going to have 8 or 9 sacks, 35 to 40 tackles. We're going to lose. We're not going to be a very good team. And he's going to go to the Pro Bowl. And then everybody's going to tell me how I'm wrong. So when I was on radio, halfway through the season, everybody's like, Ian, I know what you're talking about. I don't see him. He's not making any plays. Then when he makes a Pro Bowl, you know what everybody said? You see what? I'm not seeing disruption. I'm not. My eye's pretty good about disruption. I'm not seeing disruption. I'd say when I'm watching Donald from the Rams, I'm seeing disruption. When I watched J.J. Watt when he was balling and he was healthy, disruption. When I'm seeing Gerald McCoy, I see a good get-off. Everybody has to say he has a good get-off.
Mm-hmm.
Then what? Then what? What is that result? What has it resulted in? I'm waiting.
They got no way around it. They got a terrible cast around him, no question. So, like, even if Gerald gets a good get-off, there's nothing there.
Why do you need a supporting cast?
Donald doesn't need it. Sure, but, like, if you're asking me who's better, I'd tell you Donald in a heartbeat.
No, nobody's better.
Yeah, I'd tell you in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
You know? So, like, I think Gerald McCoy is a good – I think he's one of the better defensive tackles in the league, but, like, he's not wrecking shop like Aaron Donald is, for sure.
See, now, this is my thing. If he's one of the better defensive tackles in the league, then he's got to lead something. He doesn't lead in sacks. He doesn't lead in tackles. He doesn't lead in tackles for losses. His defenses are never good. He never has statistics. But everybody keeps on saying he's the best at something. I watched the Bears, and both their defensive tackles are making tackles all over the place. I never even heard of these guys before.
Yeah.
I think Clinton McDonald is better than
I think Clinton McDonald is really good.
I think if you put Clinton McDonald where Gerald McCoy is, we'll be a better football team, not for the plays that Gerald McCoy makes, for the plays he doesn't make.
Huh.
Gerald McCoy gets pushed around the field a lot. I have nothing personal against Gerald McCoy. I swear to God. If he sees me, he's not going to like me. I know that for a fact because I've been telling the truth for a long time. Gerald McCoy gets pushed around the field a lot. I see offensive linemen putting their hands in his face like he's a punk. You know what happened? You put your hands in Warren Sapp's face? That's going to be the last thing you remember.
He'd eat it alive.
That's going to be the last thing you remember. It's going to be the longest day ever. And I'm just watching a guy get pushed around, so... Personally, I need more.
Warren Sapp.
No. I shouldn't even be bringing up his name.
Yeah.
He's definitely not.
Yeah.
Because I'm not here to abuse Gerald McCoy. Now, if you're Jason Light, okay,
yes.
You're the GM, you go into this draft.
Yes.
First of all, let's not do that. Let's go into free agency first, since free agency is first on the docket. You go into free agency, and I give you unlimited money, which they have. They have a lot of money.
No question.
They always do.
I think the fourth highest.
They always have a lot of money. What do you go get? I don't want to hear names. Let me hear position first and where you would go.
Oh, pass rush.
Like, okay.
Without a doubt,
okay.
Pass rush. Again, yeah, I know you don't want to hear names, but I don't think anybody's available there.
That's what I'm saying. There's not any names.
Right. So, like, pass rush, but like we talked about before, good pass rushers don't hit the market. Why? Nope. Oh, because it's important.
And they don't come out of college either, not the first year. Because if we get a pass rusher in the draft, he's going to struggle as a rookie, like
sure.
I said before. You know
but,
what?
But, I mean, at some point, you've got to stack it somewhere.
But they don't have time.
Well,
Jason Light doesn't have time.
If you, yeah, so... Yeah, so
you better
get
something that's going to make your team better this year. You know, we're not rebuilding anymore. I mean, we need somebody who's going to rush the passer this year, or Jason Light's going to be gone. Dirk Cutter's going to be gone.
I mean, I think they are rebuilding, but I think they don't want to hear that.
Well,
you know what I'm
you
saying?
You better not be rebuilding.
That's what I'm saying.
After you got a quarterback 4 years ago in the draft, who's played. You better not
what
be
are
rebuilding.
They proven, though? You know what I'm saying?
You better not be rebuilding with the two wide receivers we have. You better not be. You better not be. I don't want to hear that. You know what? We're not that far away, but what we need is it's not hard to go acquire. What we need is two more kick-ass offensive linemen
mm-hmm.
and two more kick-ass defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get.
Yeah.
It's hard to get.
Right.
Last year.
Well, if you don't prioritize them, because you're right, you've got to set up your draft philosophy to where you're drafting a defensive lineman, mainly an edge rusher,
mm-hmm.
an offensive lineman, mainly a tackle that could probably play guard, and a quarterback. You have to be drafting one of these three players mm-hmm. every single draft, and one of them has to be in the top 100 every time. Probably two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what you need to do, if I was a GM and I started day one, this would be my draft philosophy. I wouldn't give a damn about what's on the team now. That'd be my draft philosophy. And mm-hmm. the rest of the team, I guess you could throw in, you know, cornerback as an importance after that.
Mm-hmm.
But like a shutdown one, if you don't have a shutdown
okay.
one, because I think you do need that.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it, you figure out in free agency. Y'all got the same salary cap. You can figure it out. What players hit? What players hit the market? Great wide receivers even hit the market.
Yes,
you know what
do.
I'm saying?
Yes,
good running backs hit the market.
Mm-hmm.
It's linebackers, safeties. They all hit the market. You know what doesn't? Trench players, quarterbacks.
Correct.
You draft one of those three in the top 100 every year, and the other two, you're drafting at least one. That would be what I would do because it's a process, like you said. Mm-hmm. You can't draft, like even Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett was good last year. I like Myles Garrett.
Sure.
But
it's
like, he's not changing much.
No.
So
no.
At this point, I think it's so weird how NFL GMs, and the NFL in general, value draft picks. It's really weird to me.
Agreed.
Like, for example, right now, what's the Bucs' biggest need? Defensive end, right? Pass rusher, edge rusher, something, okay?
Yes.
Who's the best one? It's Bradley Chubb from NC State.
Mm-hmm.
He's the best one. They're picking at 7 right now. To get Chubb, they've got to jump 4 or 5 spots.
Yeah.
What's it going to cost to jump 4 or 5 spots?
Everything.
But what?
Maybe a first next year.
Okay.
That's a lot, isn't it? To get a kid that might maybe okay, how many once again, I'm thinking about 1 year.
But you just said they're not rebuilding, you know what I'm saying?
They're not rebuilding, but how many I'm thinking about 1 year. They got to be thinking this year because there won't be a 2019 for these guys.
Okay.
Who's the last defensive end to come out in his rookie year and make a difference? So you can't put that much into a rookie. You know what I'd rather do? Go down and give me some more players. Give me more players because the 7th pick sometimes is worse than the 7th pick in the 4th round. Listen, I was in the 5th round. 5th.
Mm-hmm.
There was I don't know how many guards were picked in front of me.
Sure.
None of them outplayed me.
Sure.
So, how many people were wrong? Give me players, man. Tony Mayberry was drafted in the 4th round the same year as me. He started 9 years. 9 years. All the ones before him were gone. So, you know who does this all the time? Belichick.
Belichick. Trading down, yeah.
Trading down.
Yeah.
He knows. He knows because rookies suck. They suck, and you're better off sticking them on the bench their first year. Play them on some special teams.
But
let them figure it out.
So then it doesn't matter anyways for this. Are you basically saying that this regime is done?
Not if they spend a lot of money in free agency.
But on who? Because, you know, that's the thing. DeMarcus Lawrence going back to the Cowboys.
Well, the thing is,
Ziggy Ansah is going back to the
Cowboys. Sure, but you don't have to. Sometimes you don't have to be a high-profile player to make a team better. Because,
okay.
I mean, I wasn't a high-profile player, but when I got to Philadelphia, I was still balling out. Okay,
sure.
So
okay.
You just give me a film.
So you're a bodies guy at this point.
I mean, you could win with a bunch of Ian Beckles. You could win. it'd be a lot of short guys.
You do say so yourself.
If I do say so myself. Like I wasn't a star, but I was blocking the best guy on the field often.
Sure.
But give me more. But when you took me, when I went to Philadelphia as a free agent, okay, this is one thing Philadelphia knew. I know how to play. I play hurt. And I can block the best guy in the league. They know that because there's film.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about Chubb? The only thing you know about Chubb is that he was a fantastic college player. That's
sure.
It.
Yeah.
So was Gaines Adams, who came out, and I saw him play once, and I go, he's the worst thing I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And he ended up being one of the worst things I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can be great in college. You get to the league, and it's different.
Oh, no question.
Philosophy is different.
Right. It's way different.
Yeah. I'm with you there. I would rather a free agent, man.
I'd rather do both. Because you're not going to get the two. You're not going to get the two top guys. You're not going to get Lawrence. You're not going to get Ansah. They're going back to their teams. You're not going to get David Irving. They're going to tender him, and the Cowboys are. So there's going to be pass rushers there. I'd sign 2-3 pass rushers, and I'd still go up and get Bradley Chubb. That's what I would do.
No, I'm okay with that.
Okay, that's
you can't have too many.
No,
I've never seen
right.
a team with too many pass rushers.
Right.
Never. I've never seen it.
Right.
I'm watching the innovative defenses now putting ends on guards, and that's smart. Because it kind of throws you off a little bit.
Yeah, I like that.
That's smart.
They're doing that with Bosa.
They're doing that with a lot. Well, Bosa's,
you know, Bosa's kind of a freak.
Bosa's
but
a son of a bitch, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't think he was going to be half the player he is, but I know that. Look, he can go now.
His hands are so strong,
and he's,
man. He'll hit you with bricks.
And he loves his craft.
He does.
He loves his craft. You see him working it all the time, and he has that motor.
His brother's good, too. Like, you watch his brother?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He can play. He has like a John Randall motor, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
That doesn't slow down. That doesn't slow down ever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we both agree you have to make a splash in free agency, whatever that happens to be.
They got play.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say this. I wrote something not too long ago talking about free agency and the Bucks making a splash, spending money here and there. And a couple of people in the comments and everything, they were like, no, we got to, I mean, like, we got to worry about, you know, making sure we keep Mike Evans and all these guys, blah, blah. I'm like, you're worried about keeping the guys who just went 5-11? Correct. Come on, man. Yeah, you've got all this money. Don't tell them. What are you saving this money for? Mm-hmm. Go spend it.
Go spend it. We need Mike Evans.
No question. I'm not saying do it to where you blow it, but they have, for the last 3 years, made their cap so healthy and team friendly. Like, this is why. This is why you do it. This is why you make the team friendly deal. So you can do this every year if you need to. Where 1 year right here, hey, this is a fire sale year for basically the GM, the head coach, the defense coordinator, and probably even a couple of the franchise players, the older ones.
Sure, absolutely.
You got to do something, you're going to lose all of them.
If they lose this year, if the Bucks go 1-4, they're cleaning house. I'm telling you.
They're cleaning house and they're trading McCoy.
Yeah.
No question. That's happening.
I don't know they don't trade him in the offseason. You can't keep on waiting. He's not going to be marketable forever now. If you're going to get something for it, and I'm going to say this.
I wonder if this regime would do that, but I hear your argument out.
Now, listen, I'll put Gerald McCoy in the same light as Evan Longoria as a baseball fan. They got rid of Evan Longoria, okay? Really, they just got rid of a big salary. That's all they really did.
Right.
But I'm not sure they got that much worse. I don't know if they got that much. Evan Longoria didn't play last year.
It's baseball.
It's baseball. Right. But you know what? If last year you put Clinton McDonald at Gerald McCoy's spot, they would have won the same amount of games.
Oh, yeah. No question.
Because Gerald McCoy doesn't win games.
No question.
He doesn't win games.
Yeah.
And you have a
Clearly.
You have an opportunity to win games. Every time you step on the field, you have an opportunity to win games.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen Simeon Rice win games. I've seen Warren Sapp win games. I've seen Hardy Nickerson. I've seen Rondé Barber. I've seen Derrick Brooks. I've never seen Gerald McCoy win a game.
I've seen Levante David win games.
Thank you. But have you ever seen Gerald McCoy win a game?
No, I
haven't. I mean, once again, I'm not trying to be, but this is real talk because I'm giving it to you to tell me I'm wrong.
Right. And no, if it doesn't come out to wins,
It doesn't matter.
I'm with you.
It's like a tree falling in the woods, bro. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's a tree falling in the woods still. So, by the way, we're talking to Trevor Sikkema from Pewter Report. It's pewterreport.com, correct?
Correct.
No doubt.
Not a magazine anymore.
Not a magazine, yes, but I still have some old ones still. So, free agency's done. Draft comes up, and it's kind of hard to really say where you want to go because you have to figure out what's happening in free agency before the draft.
Right.
Because I don't get into the names and all the kind of stuff like that. Do you, when you're at the Senior Bowl, do you have any names of anybody you saw that stuck out that maybe isn't as highly thought of from other people?
Nathan Shepard was my favorite prospect at the Senior Bowl. And Nathan Shepard, do you know anything about him?
I can tell you right now, I know nothing about any college football player.
Okay.
I don't know nothing.
Okay. Nathan Shepard played D2 football at Fort Hays State.
Nice.
Okay. I believe he's from Canada. Played high school football. Was like only there for his coach. It was not really a high school program that football was really that big of a deal. He had such a great frame and so athletic. They were like, you need to put 60 pounds on you and play D-line. Mm-hmm. So he's like, okay, I did. And then he went to a small school in Canada.
Do you know what school?
I can't remember. I'll get back to you on that. Ended up having to leave because of financial reasons. Just couldn't do it. Ended up working as like a bouncer for a couple years. Then, you know, made his way to Fort Hays State because somebody told him you have to get back into football.
Yeah, sure.
And now he is a 6'3", 300-pound animal who went to the Senior Bowl. Okay, so, you know, Fort Hays State.
Never heard of it.
Right, exactly. He's basically just throwing dudes off of him at Fort Hays State, which you should be doing if you're getting considered. Mm-hmm. They're basically holding him and yanking him on every play they can just to stop him. And then at the Senior Bowl, he shows up and, you know, for example, Will Hernandez is a guy from UTEP. He's an offensive guard. He's a mean son of a gun. He had a couple reps against Will Hernandez where Hernandez was helpless. And Hernandez is, like, talked about as being a top 50, top 60 pick.
Really?
And so, you know, Mason Cole, he's a center from Michigan. A lot of people went in the week. Oh, I really like him.
I've heard of him.
He had a rip and pull move where he basically put Cole on the ground and just got to the quarterback with ease. Mm. And so this is a guy who obviously I think, you know, kind of freakish strength, freakish moments where you're talking about a late-round guy that could help. This guy's a monster.
Well, this is the thing, though. The way you explained him, not going to be a late route. if you saw something, everybody else saw
I thought so too. NFL Network, I know it's the media, so it is what it is. And NFL Network's over here pumping up these other guys. So I was like, you're talking about the wrong guy. I got to get you some of that Senior Bowl tape.
But I like to watch it. This is the thing about the NFL Network. They're not really delving into anything a lot.
They're not.
This is another thing. When it goes up to the draft and people start hearing rumors about the draft, you know and I know it ain't coming from the teams. If anybody leaks anything with the draft, they'll be fired immediately.
Right.
So when they say, hey, so-and-so is supposed to pick, it's agents.
Yeah.
Been there, done that.
Yeah,
okay, agents. So everybody's like, you hear the rumors of Buccaneers? Stop it. Stop it. They're going to start any minute. You know, rumors, Buccaneers are going to take the Saquon Barkley. I mean, I don't listen to it. I don't want to read nobody's mock draft. I don't give a
crap. You're killing me, man.
I know,
you're killing my brand.
I'm an anti-mock draft guy. I'm not going to lie to you, dude. I'm not doing a mock. I mean, it's okay that you do one. It's part of your business.
Yeah.
But I'm not reading nobody's mock draft because you know what has to happen between now and the draft? Everything.
Right.
Because this guy who's a top 10 pick, you go to the combine, run a 5.2 and see what happens.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Or you go to the combine, you do an interview, and you figure out he's an idiot.
Well, you can get away. You can go around idiot.
Sometimes.
You can get around idiot. But the one guy that's never heard of before that runs a 4.1, he gets drafted high every time. Doesn't really work out usually, though.
No.
Because, you know, if these guys that run 4.1s, and you put their film on, if I don't see them balling, I'm not drafting them.
Right.
When you get to the next league, there's no schleps out
there. Yeah, you've got to dominate college competition.
Absolutely.
No question.
Especially
if you're older. You know what I'm saying? Like, age, I think, is big deal. It depends how you look at it. But, like, if you're an older guy, if you're, like, 23, 24, hell yeah, you better be whooping up on 19, 20-year-olds. You know what I'm saying?
No doubt.
Like, and if you're not, I'm not picking you.
Agreed.
So age matters. Like, people like to talk about age and, oh, how old is he for the contract? Like, I don't even care then. You know, like, for example, Calvin Ridley, he's a wide receiver from Alabama. Mm. He's going to be, I think, 24 in his rookie year. And that's kind of old for a rookie. But I don't care because he whoops up on everybody
mature
in college.
Maturity is not a bad thing.
Like, and people are like, oh, he's going to be, you know, you're only going to get so many years. I don't care.
Please.
You got to draft a guy to think, okay, well, I'm getting him for one contract. I'm getting Calvin Ridley for one contract in his mid-20s. He's going to be good because I've seen him be good.
Absolutely.
No, I'm with you there.
The only thing for me is important is I don't give a crap. I guess if you're a defensive lineman and everybody says you're a 6'3 and you're 6'1, I don't give a crap. I don't give a crap because I had scouts say to me, like, I wrote 6'3 on my program. I'm not. I'm 6'1, and I was 6'1 at the combine.
They let you write your own?
Well, they say how tall you are.
Oh, okay.
So
we never trust schools.
No, you can't.
Never.
Everybody puts an inch. Yeah. Everybody puts an inch.
Yeah.
So I had scouts coming out, and I remember a Raider scout walking out, and he goes, are you Ian Beckles? I said, yeah. He goes, you're a hell of a football player. I said, thank you. I appreciate that, sir. He goes, if you were 6'4, you'd be a first rounder. I go, well, I'm only 6'3". He goes, yeah. He goes, you're no taller than 6'1", sir. And I go, well, it's not that big of a deal. He goes, certainly is. That's what he said to me.
Yeah.
So they told me if I was 6'4".
Some dudes are sticklers for it because of those situations like you talked about earlier. You know, the length thing. And they're afraid of the little losses.
I don't think it's a length thing. I don't think it's a length thing.
What do you think it is?
I think it's the sexiness.
Of the pick?
Of the big
giant guy?
Of the player.
Huh.
You know what I mean? Because when I was in Philadelphia, you know, I started my first year in Philadelphia. The second year, they gave George Hegeman about three times what I made. And they signed him in the offseason. And they put him in there and they gave him my position. I said to Ray Rhodes, I said, Ray, if I outplay this guy, am I going to play? He goes, yep. I outplay him. He sat and he backed me up the whole year. He was sexier than I was.
Mm-hmm.
He's 6'7",
sure.
330.
Yeah, there's an element to that.
So
I believe that.
They just think if you're 6'1 and you're a guard, you're just going to be there.
I think a lot of times teams with measurables get into those like little fears. Like you said, you blocked Hall of Famers. Mm. But there were a couple weird guys that gave you fits.
Yeah.
I think teams look at that, those weird guys, and they like overreact to it.
Sure.
Like they want to pick a perfect prospect that can go against everybody instead of looking at a guy who can play the damn game.
Correct.
And actually pick him. I mean, if you're solid 80, 85, 90% of the matchups you have, I'm picking you, you know?
See, I just wasn't the average. You know what I mean? Usually, the guy 6'1 couldn't block those guys.
Right.
So the guy's 6'7 had a better chance.
You've got to really convince yourself. Like, I mean, like, you know, Aaron Donald's 6'1.
Mm.
You know, I remember looking at his combine measurement. I think he was like 6'1", 280. Ooh. And both of those things are in the bottom 10, bottom Ooh. 5 percentile of defensive tackles in the NFL. But he's a freak.
Sapsic one.
Right. Anyone? Exactly. Well, but I mean, we just said two Hall of Famers. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
It's the unmeasurables, bro.
Oh,
it's
no
the,
question.
Like somebody said to me, said to me today, you would have made a lot more money if you were taller. And I even said it. And I said, yes, but I probably wouldn't have played as hard. I had to play harder than everybody else because they were always trying to replace me.
That's fair.
Always.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was out there pushing harder than everybody else out there, absolutely. So I really want to take you up on getting you back here and watching some film.
No, it'd be great. I'd love to do that.
I like to get some young minds and enlighten them a little bit.
That'd be great.
Get some Bud Lights maybe and sip them.
All right with that. More of a Coors Light guy. You're a Coors Light guy? Hey, you know. It's all right. Beggars can't be choosers.
We can find
something
for you, some Tito's back there. Oh, okay. Like that. You like some Tito's?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get that done, absolutely. Once again, I want to thank Hess Spinal. They're the people right there. If you get any car crashes, go and check them out. They are people. And Trevor Sikkema, I appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, no, it was great, man. It's been great to finally get here.
It's been wonderful. And I would tell Scott I want to get more involved with the Pewter Report.
I will.
I've been talking to Mark forever. And we just got to get this.
Mark can get relayed. I'll relay it for you.
I used to write for the Pewter Report.
All right.
Back in the day when Sapp and those guys were playing.
Okay.
So I got a little bit of experience. So tell Scott I said what's up.
I will.
PewterReport.com, everybody. This has been In the Trenches. If you guys want to email me, IanBeckles@RadioInfluence. I appreciate you guys listening in. This has been In the Trenches. Everybody have a wonderful week and please be safe. Peace out.
You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
This is a Crush Performance Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We're joined now by Tim Nicely, the president of VFlex Technologies and VFlex Sports. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
You know, I didn't start out to actually develop VFlex for baseball and softball. You know, it just came out of the due diligence. And when I started to see the clues that I needed, you know, to build a spatial representation inside the brain so that the brain could basically teach itself better. We've been stuck in this explicit world for a long, long time, you know, to where a coach is putting a ball on a tee and he's talking to you about your swing and about your mental approach and how do you feel today and, you know, were your hips in the right spot or whatever. We went completely away from that type of approach and just looked at the brain, looked at its numbers, and its numbers weren't really good. I mean, strikeouts continue to rise at the big league level. It's ridiculous that we've taken, you know, the path that we've actually taken over the last maybe 20 years, you know, and it's really not gotten us anywhere.
Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crichel, can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.